G'day everyone, this is X-Fan, the Phantom Podcast. Our website is chroniclechamber.com, and you can subscribe to our podcast via YouTube or through your favourite podcast apps. Please give us a rating, which will help other fanatics find us. Now, normally we do try and hold a comics and news review every month, but December 2023 was pretty busy for us, as I'm sure it was for everyone listening to us at home, or on your tractor, or wherever you're listening to us. So please sit down, grab a milk, or a Scandinavian beer, more on that later, and watch or listen to us as we review and discuss the latest from a Phantom fan perspective. So I'm Steve, of course, and welcome. Jermaine's first on my list here, so g'day, Jim. How's your December and January been, mate?
Busy like everyone else's. Holidays are never quite long enough. Back at work, back slaving, earning not enough money, but we can put all of that aside and we can talk Phantom, which is the beauty about this little escapism. We can put those troubles to the side for an hour or so and dribble, and hopefully you will enjoy listening to us. So great to hear from you, mate.
Excellent. And Dan, how are you going? How's the weather up there, mate? Every time I turn on the news, and it's not very often, but every time I turn on the news, Queensland's either got a typhoon or a drought or a cyclone or something going on up there. What about you? Are you safe where you are?
Yeah, we're far enough back from the coast to be safe from the cyclone that is developing and brewing off the coast. They put out a severe weather warning for about 2,000 kilometres worth of coastline the other day. So we're a few hundred k's back from that, which is good. But it's been brutally hot. I was just saying to Germ before we started recording, it's it's been that 36 degrees with 85% humidity, and it's just unpleasant. Anyway, we get to go back to I'm at a private school where I work, and all of the kids are going to be putting ties on to come back to school tomorrow. So I'm sure they can't wait.
No doubt. It's just interesting. Both you fellas are, in the warm, nice city. Both wearing t-shirts. Me down in Ballarat, I'm still middle of January. I'm still wearing a jumper.
Australia.
Yeah, many climates. Right, yeah. Let's get straight into it. So there's a few frus to review. A few frus to review. To do.
You want to review a few frus or?
Yeah, well, there's something to do, isn't it? Anyway, so it's just December and January. Now we're not reviewing the annual, which came out this past week, mainly because, well, I haven't received mine. Have you received yours yet, Jim?
No, I haven't received mine either. There's been a railway accident halfway between Sydney. I think it's between Adelaide and Perth. So we haven't. Yeah, so I haven't received my mail subscription copy either. So yeah,
so WA really is cut off from the rest of Australia. Then trains can't get through.
We can only hope.
Well, I have received mine, so I know that they have sent them. I haven't even opened it yet to flick through it, but I'm looking forward to settling in. But I think it's best to just to devote a whole episode to that one anyway, given it's what is this, 7 or 8 story book. There'll be lots to talk about. So to get through the December and January comics and listen to everything from around the world before we get into the annual will be good, and we'll do the annual as a special standalone podcast probably in the next fortnight, I suppose.
Yes.
Yep. I think that sounds like a good plan. So without further ado, let's get into what Fru has released in December and January. So 3 issues, I think, 1959, 1960, which was the Christmas special, and 1961, which is the first issue of 2024. So in Fru 1959, we had the main story was Ruck R's Star by Daniel Carlson and Anthony Spain. Set in the 1920s, in light of the recent discovery of Tutankhamun's tomb, grave robbers are running wild across the world, including the Bengalan jungle. The greedy thieves are after the Ruck R's Star. But they're not the only ones. A young member of the once-feared Gonji tribe is out to impress a girl who's fallen for a returning cricket star and thinks that recovering the ancient relic is the way to woo the young girl's heart. Will he be successful? Or will the robbers beat him to the punch? Or will the Phantom knock them all for 6 in protection of the ancient temple?
I like that little one about knocking them all for six after the cricket scene in there. I actually thought it was pretty cool that Daniel Carlson wrote in a cricket scene. It was interesting that Anthony Spay, an American, knew how to draw it, and actually drew a cricket bat and not a baseball bat. But I think there's a couple of times we've seen cricket scenes in the Phantom, and it makes sense as a former British colony. But obviously, old mate here is an IPL star or something like that, off earning big bucks with the T20 leagues around the world, and nice enough to visit.
That's what I was thinking. Until they said this is the 20s, I thought, oh no, this is set back in 1920s. Yeah, it's got a very modern name for the creek. It was some Guts and Glory or something, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, that's a good point.
It would have been nice if they'd edited that to a South African league or
probably not South African, but. Yeah.
Well, maybe
County Cricket, Sheffield Shield.
Yeah, or Kent, Liverpool, But it would have been. Yeah. But look, that's just picking, like what Dan said. Great to see that they actually portrayed it correctly. I remember it was Cesar Spadaro, I believe, that did a cricket scene. If you're on YouTube, I'll have that up so you can see what I'm talking about. All the fielders and the bowlers are wearing pads and it's just, you can just tell that they've never seen this idea of cricket before, but it's good to see that that it's at least portrayed and someone's done their research. So I must admit, I have a bit of a love-hate relationship with this story. I love the fact that, like, the redemption story with the with this guy, I can't remember his name, but
young tribesman.
Yeah, the young tribesman. Like in past stories, he becomes like the bad guy. But
Barton is his name.
Yeah, but he kind of rescues the day and it's a good redemption kind of story for him. And it's nice to see a down and out loser actually save the day. But then my hate part with the story is that I am so over every time a creator, this is a real bugbear of mine. Steven's got his with the Phantom getting knocked out on the head. My bugbear is that every creator creates a new jungle tribe. Let's just stick to the four or five and just stick with that. I get over that. I get over the lost tribe. And it's like, Benguela is bigger than the whole of Africa in the sense that, there's so many lost tribes. There's so many tribes in there with all different names. And I just feel like, instead of trying to create a new tribe, let's use a tribe that has already been established. We've got Longo, Wembezi, Mora, Tringi, Ugan, there's five. Then you've got your rope people. You can quite easily come up with 10. And that's enough tribes. But but apart from that, the Phantom doesn't really do much. A bit of a love-hate relationship with this story.
I'm agreeing with you there, Jeremy. Like, I was wondering, is that a tribe we've ever heard of before? And I'm glad to hear you say that, that it's a new one because I was not familiar with it.
Yeah, look, I completely understand what you're saying. I think there needs to be different types of tribes. And this Gongi tribe is, the fact that they've got an ancient temple and that sort of stuff that they don't access very often and all that sort of stuff, but certainly you could cap it at, a dozen to 15 tribes in total and have creators work from there. But we know that... no one really has ever kept a running eye on these things anyway. So, it's just one of those things. It's just another little tribal group in Benguela. I didn't mind the story. I thought it was, hit a lot of familiar beats, I suppose, in terms of the Phantom defending archaeological sites and sacred sites for various tribes, defending them from grave robbers. I thought it was... mixing it up by having a female antagonist, I suppose, and a female is the leader of the Grave Robbers, and she's a pretty nasty piece of work, very very you know, dollar signs in her eyes and delusions of power that she might get from the artifacts that they find. But I thought the character arc, like you said, Germ, of Mubata, the you know, feeble, weak, underling type character in the tribe who's so unsure of himself, he decides he's got to do something rash to impress a young lady, doubts himself the entire way, runs away from the danger, and then ends up saving the day by, you know, in the scene that we've got on the screen there, if you're on YouTube, finding the flower that is going to save the Phantom from the fever that he's brought upon himself by being stabbed by an old rusty spear.
Yeah. There's also the, where you talked about the dollar signs with the, you know, the look at the bottom of 21, which is the crown in reflection in her eyes. What do you guys think about the artwork? Is Anthony Spey almost going too American with his portrayal of the Phantom? Are we happy with it?
Oh, look, for mine, that was the when we got, yeah. No, to me, it's over the top. Like, the artwork's perfectly fine, except probably literally for the character of the Phantom, who's a bit too muscle bound, a bit too much of a gym fiend, freak, steroid pumping, you know, all the things that we've always said about this muscle bound Phantom. Probably a bit over the top. The front cover that Antonio's done has got a lithe sort of a Phantom and or an athletic Phantom, and that again is probably more the physique of the Phantom that I prefer, rather than if you turn literally to the next page, Germ, on YouTube, where he's up the tree there, you're like, wow, that's muscles on muscles in that Phantom costume.
Okie dokie. Now, that was the first story in issue 1959. The second story is Bad Blood in Bangala, Part 1, The Old Devil Road by Shane Foley. So this story opens, and you can see this on the screen now. This story opens with the Phantom paying a visit to the Magana tribe. Before I go any further, is that a new tribe too, Germ?
Yes, it is. naughty, naughty, Shane.
Rightio. And one, Shane, you're good at putting in little tidbits from history. What's this new stuff? Anyway, so opening with the fan paying a visit to the Magana tribe, where he's kept up to date with the latest technologies and strategies
to keep
wildlife safe from poachers. We are soon informed of an attack from an old foe on a traveling party. Why and how has the old foe returned? What is the significance of this particular party to this foe? And will the Phantom get them into line? So get them in time. Now, I think there's a number of talking points here. From my reading, I think there's a number of classic elements just referred to throughout the story. You know, we've got the Hunter Trail here, but I'm thinking the Hunter Witch in my own head. And the Devil's Road, don't I know that from another story?
Yep, you've got the Golden People, which Shane Foley's already addressed.
I thought that was from his earlier story, but I just didn't want to say it in case I was wrong.
And then you've got, this is another one, if he's on page 28. If all has gone well, they should be near Kidder's Crossing. I think from memory, you're testing my memory here. It was a old Wilson McCoy story, Captain Kidder. People were trying to find his treasure and they found the treasure chest and they opened it and there was nothing in it. And he had a joke or something in there and that's where the Kidder. So that's another old Wilson McCoy story that Shane Foley is referring to. So yeah, there's a lot of those love. Interesting, the leopard cult is, we've seen Team Phantom Men create a story of the leopard cult, but the leopard men is quite a well-known African element. But Lee Falk has never actually written about the leopard men. So, so that's interesting. But I quite like this story. Shane Foley's stuff's always got little hidden gems. In one of the past stories, we talked about being heavy on copy, on text.
Heavy on the dialogue and the text. I don't see that in this one as much as some of his more recent stuff.
Yeah, that's what I was going to make mention as well. Like this page here, 28, is probably the heaviest. And then I love the fact about, you know, and it's just one page, but it's, and it could maybe create room for other stories and all that, but it shows the Phantom working alongside Africans trying to protect, you know, rhinos and stuff like that. And that's what, that's the Phantom I grew up with, you know, who goes against poachers and, you know, instead of being reactionary, like the Phantom has been in a lot of Lee Falk stories, this is more of a modern take, which what you talked about before, Steve. And I like that. And I like how the Phantom is working alongside. He's not, you know, the white overlord. He's helping alongside his fellow man. And I just, you know, that one page made me all warm and fuzzy. So, yeah, I did like that.
That's good. What about you, Dan? What did you like about the story?
Yeah, well, again, you know, I said about the Rakkar's Star hitting some familiar tropes with grave robbers. This is another familiar trope, isn't it, with the poachers? And I agree with what Germ said there about having the Phantom work alongside the rangers and tracking the rhinos in this instance. Reminds me of the box. We've had a lot of rhinos recently it being poached from Bengala. That story that appeared in the annual last year and won the favourite story from Frew fans in 2023. In terms of Shane, I think Shane Foley is just continues to go from strength to strength in his stories. I think you mentioned him dialing back the dialogue in this particular 8-page story. And I thought that was really effective. You just said there about page 28 being the heaviest on dialogue. On page 29, there's literally only two words. In this 8 pages, there's two full page splash pages. He's doing more with less, if you like. And I think that his art is also just really starting to find his groove. He's always been had really interesting layouts. And again, you can see on the page that's on the screen there, I think it's 30 and 31, just the way that he uses the page and the full size of the page and different panel sizes and that sort of thing. But I really think that Shane's Phantom in particular and his action scenes, and again, we see the splash page here at the end of the story, his depiction of the Phantom himself and then his action scenes are just, really maturing, if I can use that word. I think we're clearly seeing someone who's getting used to drawing more and more and becoming more and more adept at it.
He's definitely allowing the art to tell the story rather than the text.
Yes.
Or solely relying on the text.
Yeah, so just to kind of backtrack a little bit, and this is all I'm going to say, is when we were talking about how the Phantom works alongside, there was this two little bits here. It says, I've had involvement with both Golden People and the Leopard Cult. Do you mind if I get involved? You know, we were talked about how he works alongside. I just thought that was, you know, and then the guys, like, of course, you know, we want you to do it and stuff. But I just thought that was a nice little touch and kind of backed up with what we were talking about before.
They were asking permission to help rather than just diving in and doing it. Just reminded me last time I was around paramedics. They always ask, do you mind if I do this? Do you mind if I do that? Who's going to mind if you're going to help them out? But, yeah.
Throughout that, Antonio Lemos had done it before. He's actually a double page spread or a wraparound cover, if you like. A little curiosity from this for mine. It was picked up by somebody who sent us an email querying it about it as well. But Mubata, the main character, is for some reason blue. On both the front and the back cover, and there's absolutely no real reason why he would be blue.
Artistic license.
No mention of, hey?
Artistic license.
Artistic. Oh, well, my kids were watching Aladdin today, so and he's blue, so maybe Mubata here has got some genie powers that I'm not aware of. But yeah, just an odd little thing that we should have that blue character there. I picked it up and I thought, is this a reprise of the Blue Giant story? No, he's a tiny little character. What is going on here? But Yeah, I like Antonio's work. I always do, and I like his style. Just an interesting artistic choice, as you say, to make him blue.
Moving on to the Christmas special through 1960. Now, the Christmas special was filled with Tony DePaul stories from, well, I guess, the last couple of years. One Sunday and then the dailies. First off, the Sunday was, I might pronounce this wrong, but I'm going to say the Inter News by Tony DePaul with art by Jeff Weigel. I think we have covered this a bit when we were reviewing the Sunday stories, but anyway, here goes the little synopsis. Two young Maori ladies, annoyed that they don't have an opportunity to test themselves in a coming-of-age challenge like the men, set off for Mabutan to prove they have what it takes to make it on their own. Little do they know the nefarious dangers that lurk in the sleazy corners of the city. However, before they left the village, they did take the good mark necklaces that belonged to their grandmothers. Will it be enough to protect them from the evil that lurks, or is there a particular ordinary man who is also walking those streets? Fellas, now, we did comment about this story a bit in the Best Of episode, and I put it up there as one of my Best Of stories because after rereading it in the Christmas special, I just saw different layers in it that I didn't get in the Sunday by Sunday or the week by week, and saw it as quite a, you know, even though it was this coming of age and empowerment story, there's also these really dark elements within the story, these grave dangers that these women face. And I got a whole new appreciation of the story.
Enjoyed it a lot more in comic book form than I did in the and I remember enjoying it on a Sunday by Sunday basis back when it was first published. But just to see it unfold on the pages, and then you go, oh, I must have missed that Sunday one week or whatever, where you catch up on a little bit of the story. A couple of little plot holes for mine, like you mentioned in your synopsis there, Steve, about the two good mark necklaces that the girls take with them. They don't actually feature again or pop up in any way.
They met up with Heloise and what's her face?
Yeah. Yeah, well, that was going to be my second plot hole, actually. Yeah, good point they did there. But they Heloise just stumbles across them as they're coming into the suburbs of Mabutan. And then we find out, you know, in the last page, Heloise contacts her dad and says, oh, about 3 weeks ago I saw these Maori girls. I'm like, oh, you probably – feels like you probably could have been a bit more on top of that. Then, you know, the jungle drums probably would have got the word back quicker than Heloise with a mobile phone. So, but other than that, you know, I thought it was a really cool story. I like that. I like the way that the Phantom is many men. The Phantom walks the streets as an ordinary man. We've often talked about, oh, trench coat versus bomber jacket. I think this story really sets where that should be. The Phantom walks the streets as an ordinary man. He's 17 different ordinary men in this one. He's a package delivery guy. He's just a tourist in the street. He's got so many just normal disguises as he goes about being in the city. Construction worker. And he's always just happens to be close by the girls. And I thought that was a really effective use of that old jungle saying.
I didn't really enjoy the story as much as what you two, but I enjoyed that element. Probably the most was the fact that we have seen the Phantom walk in the streets as an ordinary man better than a trench coat. But growing up, the only people that wore trench coats were naughty men who were doing rude things. Streakers. They're not the only ones, you know, that wore trench coats where I grew up. So I would much rather, the Phantom being more normal, wearing other costumes than a trench coat.
More ordinary. Actually, to go on the classic literature, that, you know, had Lord of the Rings, and this one I've got Man for All Seasons. He just reminded me of the, I can't remember the name of the character, that just escapes me now, but the common man, I think, who was always, it was a different character depending on the scene. And that just reminded me of that one too.
Also thought it was really interesting that It would seem that the whole city knows that the Maori girls are in town. Like, they become almost quasi celebrities. And we've got the cameo of Pete Klaus, of course, as the bouncer on the gate. Everyone in the nightclub seems to know of the Maori girls. When the bartender, who's, you know, working in quite underhanded fashion with the bad guy, he says, "Oh, you can't do the Maori girls. You can't take the Maori girls. They're too high profile." It's interesting for a pair of girls who are essentially homeless in the city.
And seem to not really have having clues, not the right word, but unaware of the popularity that's surrounding them.
Well, they're the ingenues, aren't they? Again, the pronunciation, but you know, innocent, unsophisticated. They've got no idea really what they're doing, what's going on. They're just loving life.
One other thing I want to make mention of, not story related, but this panel here, which is from the 1st of September 2022, or year 2022, is the Phantom. It's got the bit where he, you know, leaves the jungle, walks the streets of the town on the outskirts of Moatuan. He doesn't go to Little Thomas' house, as we've seen in so many Lee Fork classic stories. He's gone to another farm family where he leaves a vehicle and he leaves the horse. So it's just interesting that Tomma has obviously grown up and now gone to uni or whatever, and the Phantom is using another location. Whether these are Tomma's parents or the same farm or whatever, but it's just something that I don't think anyone has actually raised before.
The next three stories are really, well, one story in three chapters. The way I've explained it, are three entries of Tony DePaul's opus chronicling Old Man Moz's vision of the death of the Walker line of phantoms due to the rescuing of Savannah from Grave Lions Prison. I think we've spoken a heck of a lot about this story over the last couple of years. And now we finally see it in comic book form, or three parts of it in comic book form, where we get to see how well it flows. And I guess it's whetting my appetite to see the whole thing collected into one volume.
I think it's going to read so much better if it's all collected in one volume. One thing I want to quickly jump in on: the 28th of October, the panel, again, if you're on YouTube, you'll see it. But is it just me, or does that remind me of Star Wars? With those little, what are they called? In the deserts and all that, just Old Man Moz with the hood over, with the, it's gone, the black. It just reminds me, and I'm not a huge Star Wars fan, but that just screams Star Wars to me.
Oh, look, there's so much going on in these three chapters, I guess, of the larger story. This was so enjoyable to sit and read. You know, what was, I don't know, I didn't actually look, I probably should look, how many months and months of dailies we had collected together here. It's almost half of the Rack and Ruin series, which went for a tick over 2 years. So it must be about a year's worth of daily strips that have come together. And I'm with you, Steve, 100%. It just highlights how this has been written. Yes, for a daily drip feed, but Tony DePaul clearly has got a big picture in mind here. One thing that I found myself noting, it's interesting that people complain in the, you know, when some of the complaints you see about this story online, and to be fair, the online commentary is more negative than positive about this storyline. And we know that, you know, people are more likely to get on and have a whinge or make a comment if they want to have a whinge rather than if they want to say something positive. So you're more likely to see those negative comments. But one of the things has been, oh, it's so drawn out. You know, when anything ever happen, it zips along, I think, when you're reading it in a comic book form. It's always on the move. There's very little of the backing over itself, which we've seen in daily stories before, whether it's Lee Fork or other Tony DePaul stuff, probably mostly Lee Fork, where you'll have three strips in a row that basically show you the same thing. Now, there's been times in this, for instance, the death of Jampa, when Savannah actually shoots him, it takes about, it probably is 6 or 8 days of the moment between when Jumper gets hit by the bullet and he falls to the floor. But there's flashbacks all the way through it. And when you read that collated, it's super effective. Super effective. And I get, yeah, that probably did feel a bit dragged out on a day-by-day basis. You're like, this is kind of the same thing, but it's not. I really loved reading this as a collated story. You pick up so much more nuance on the relationships between the characters, the Phantom's frustration with Moz, Moz's deception and the way that he's manipulating both the Phantom and Diana, but getting the story as he wants it to be told, and the picking up on the I promised you this and I fulfilled that promise, but I fulfilled it in a way you didn't expect. These sorts of things. Both the Phantom and Moz were doing that to each other. It's so rich, this story. It's so rich when you read it like this.
It's just interesting as you're going through the panels there, Jim, how many of them actually don't have text and Tony's allowing the art to tell the story. And you're saying before with the shooting of Jumper, that's an obvious one. There's a few there when he's being up with fever or when he's just been operated on. And then again, in what we've just seen at the close of the Rack and Ruin saga for the moment, the coming home part, or the journey home, whatever it was, and I think that last week, pretty much the same. It was only like a couple of words each day, but the art was just really telling the story.
So just a couple of things. These stories start on page 33 in the comic, which was the 25th of October 2021. It finishes on the 1st of October 2022. So it's literally just over 11 months worth of stories. So, I think we've talked that the stories need to be put together. Whoever out of India, Sweden, or Australia, whoever bites the bullet first and puts all of these stories in a trade paperback, I think is going to hit maybe not Sweden, but I think out of whether it's Regal or Shacky or Fru, I think there's only going to be room for one of those to compile as a trade paperback all of these stories in one. So it's going to be interesting to see whoever does it first, because
I certainly hope it's Australia and they get it done quicker.
Yeah, I reckon. Look, I would like to see maybe Fruit do it as their next annual.
I don't think Fruit can do it as a regular series because they these three are in issue 1960. If they bring it out in the next annual, they'll have produced the same stories in a regular issue. Yeah, annual, Christmas special, whatever, but as a numbered issue twice in a year. I don't think they'll do that. I think it does need to be a trade paperback, and I think it deserves to be a trade paperback. I'd love to see it with that treatment. I'd love to see Jeff Weigel, Jeff Weigel or Mike Manley, if he's up to it, do a cover for it, a couple of splash pages perhaps. I think there's a real opportunity to make it something pretty special. Tony DePaul to, compile the blog posts that he's written about it into an article that editorial type thing that goes in the book as well. I'd love to see that. And I think it would be really, really popular. I don't know whether you're right about there's only room for one of those, because if Regal does it, are Australian fans going to be able to buy that? Are American fans going to be able to buy that? Is it going to be produced widely enough for people so I don't know. But I think it really deserves that treatment, like you say.
Yeah, because if India does it, and that means that Australia won't, well, that's going to put a lot of us out because we just don't get the Indian stuff.
Well, you can you can get them through.
You can, but it's only really the check it out. So and that would only be in limited quantities too. So Brew do it. Then it's widely available here, which is their, which I would assume is their number one market. Make it, do the trade paperback, and but also do the stories or the chapters that they haven't produced in their regular comic. They've still got the opportunity to do that in the next Christmas special if they want.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
And there would probably be people go, oh, well, I'm going to buy the trade paperback because I've already read these stories in the paper and in a comic book. And it's fine. You don't have to buy it. But I would love to be reading this story. I can see myself reading this story multiple times. And I don't necessarily want to dig out 3, 4, 5 different frus to find it and flick through it.
The other bonuses of the Tony DePaul stuff, or even Manly or Weigel or whoever's putting extra little notes in there, will be a great selling point for it too.
Well, I think the story's going to be better received collected, because I think people read it and understand it and follow it and then be able to go back and go, oh, so this is where that is. You know, this is what it's referenced to there on page 10 is referencing about page 240. And so I think when it is collected all together, I think the story will be received a lot better.
The stuff about Savannah being triggered, but when she heard about Jumper being a policeman who wants to retire on a warm beach, you know, that actually stood out in a way here, and you can pick up, it was actually referred to 3 or 4 times before Savannah jumps at that. So when it's in a collected story, that little nugget is sitting on the surface, whereas when you're reading it on a daily basis, it's a lot harder to dig up and find.
That's right.
Yeah. And I would like to see an editorial article included in the trade paperback where it actually talks about that. So say, for instance, you know, this bit here on the 3rd of the 3rd, 2022, where Kit's actually talking about warm beaches, the verbal tick uses in his emails to me. It would be good if they actually had like a, what do they call it? Like a reference where all the stories in the past, so you don't have to include all of these stories, but it then says, you know, it kind of refers, and it has the panel when Tony DePaul included that reference 8 years ago. He can have that. So there's like a reference referring back to past stories and stuff like that. So I think there's a lot of room for it. I don't think Frew will do it, because I think we saw with the 70th anniversary story, which was part of the regular issue and not as a trade paperback sold outside of their normal numbering, I don't think Frew will go down the path of doing separate comics anymore. So I think the only way we will see it is through Regal or Shacky.
You think that's because of money thing?
Yeah, and I don't think that, you know, we're kind of getting sidetracked and we can move on to final points in a second, but I don't think Frew really cracked selling enough copies of their past graphic novels and trade paperbacks the way they did. And I, you know, because like there wasn't really a push in comic book stores or bookstores like in Angus and Robertson, you know, and Amazon and stuff like that. They didn't really push that side of things where a lot of graphic novels and trade paperbacks are sold. So I wonder.
I think they kept it too safe and didn't actually do it properly.
Yeah. And this is all hearsay. This is all just, you know, our personal opinion. We don't have any inside word or anything like that. But I think they basically, didn't get the trade paperbacks into the right avenues for it to be able to reach non-newspaper, regular Phantom readers.
Well, I certainly hope you're wrong on that, Germ, but it makes sense what you say. I think that, you know, it's dead set easy for them, because the artwork's already produced, it's already colored, they've already assembled it into pages. So really it's just dragging the same files over, and you know, in terms of actually assembling this book, it's a lot easier than the other trade paperbacks that they've done. So I would hopefully that would make it a little bit more appealing.
Yeah, well, hopefully I'm wrong. Anyone else
we can only raise,
apart from the cover, is anything else about the stories you just want to raise?
Yeah, I just thought it was interesting. Again, there's a lot of commentary about the artwork through this phase. We know that Mike Manley was crook a bit through this year, and we had artwork from uncredited artwork from Brett Blevins and Scott Cohn through the section here. As I flicked through it, I came to a page where I was like, oh, I don't think this is Mike Manley anymore. So I went back and on page 34, which is the 1st of November, the strip from the 1st of November, that's the last page for quite a while that you actually see a credit to Mike Manley. Now, I think Mike Manley's artwork is still drifting through here, but then you can sort of pick up a vibe where it's different. And it's actually harder to tell in the book like this, I thought, and the artwork was a lot more seamless. And Mike Manley doesn't get credited again, I think, until just about the end of that story.
Page 43.
Yeah, 43. So, you know, that's, you know, a big chunk of time. And I don't know, maybe that's Frew who are taking the DePaul and Manley box out, but they've left the fork dated box in all the time. So I don't know. I just thought it was really interesting to have the opportunity to work through and try and pick up when different artists were working on it and when they weren't. So, again, easier to do in a compilation.
Good point.
Yeah. Now, we have spoken about the cover in the best of episode. Anything you want to add to it in case people haven't watched or listened to our best of episode?
The cover works a lot better when it's opened up as a wraparound cover.
Yeah.
If you're just looking at the front cover, it's a nice cover. But when you add in the back with the, you know, the Phantom Zen, Death in the Himalayas, and the little Easter eggs, it works a lot better. Me personally, and I've had a conversation about this with a few fans, I don't get hang up whether it's got Christmas elements in it or not. Like, yeah, I like the Christmas elements. I love the Jeff Weigel Christmas cover that he did, what was about 4 or 5 years ago, with the ugly Christmas jumper that was knitted by Diana, which is very unpractical in a jungle. But, you know, love that cover. Glenn Lumsden's was another one, which has got the Phantom and Santa Claus, and there's a few little Easter eggs in there. But unless it's a really, really good Christmas-themed cover, I would rather have a good cover than a Christmas cover that looks a little bit cheesy or doesn't quite fit it. I think, long rant short, I didn't mind this not being a Christmas theme.
Well, I think Jeff's sort of nailed the best of both worlds here, in the sense that if you're looking at the front cover, there's no Christmas elements to it at all. You go, oh, that's not a Christmas cover at all. You open it up and it's a Christmas cover in the same way that Die Hard is a Christmas movie. There's a lot of stuff going on. It just happens to be at Christmas. So I think this is this falls into the camp of, if you think Die Hard is a Christmas movie, then this is a Christmas cover. If you don't, then it's not.
Very good. Yippee-ki-yay. Moving on to Frew 1961. We'll start off with the cover, seeing as we've done that last few times, but the cover here is done by Jason Polos. Kind of reminiscent of a classic cover with Phantom battling the shark.
Frew number 6. And then there was a slightly alternate version of Frew in the 90s somewhere. I know Matt Kime did a tribute cover for that for one of his past comics as well. Jamie Johnson did a Phantom battling a shark for our sketch session, which was won by Bradley from Phantom Cave. So yeah, it's Phantom battling a shark. It's pretty cool. I do like it.
It is a classic pose.
If you like, well, and we'll get into the interior shortly, but if you like Phantom battling a shark, my goodness, have this the first 7 pages got some stuff for you.
Yeah.
Okay. So this story, this issue has 3 stories, 2 of which are part 2 and part 3 of the same story. So those are Ghosts of Ships Past, part 2 and part 3 by Andrew Constant and Jason Polos, which, of course, is a continuation of the story from the 75th anniversary special that sees the Phantom once again facing Captain Cleaver, whom he first met when he was a kid on his way to be educated in America. Cleaver now has a family of her own and is determined to have her revenge on the Phantom. And as we can see here, there is a lot of sharks.
Yeah. This Kit Walker can hold his breath for a long time. And given that he's very active, breaking a chair and smashing it over sharks' heads and punching sharks and that sort of thing, he's
all underwater. He's very strong.
Incredibly well.
I must admit, the second part, so the first part was like, oh, Captain Cleaver, that's pretty cool. So that was the first part, which we saw in the 75th anniversary. This second part, which has got the battling the sharks, and I liked how she explained what was happening while we are seeing the Phantom fighting. Like, I would much rather see the Phantom fighting a shark underwater than just having Captain Cleaver and her son talking on a ship and having the camera spanning around to try and keep it interesting. It was well done in having action while there was the monologue. So I loved that. I thought that was very good storytelling. Who doesn't love the Phantom fighting a shark? It's ridiculous. I'm not sure if you can actually punch a shark, let alone use a chair as a wrestling move out of a WWE. I'm not sure any of that is possible, but I loved that part of the second part. First part was a lovely little bit. Third part, I didn't enjoy.
Yeah, Jason has clearly had some of that, hasn't he?
Yeah, and I do get your point about part three. Part three is not quite as fun as part two. It's it takes a different path, I guess, to try and conclude the story. You don't think it's done very neatly, though, Jim?
I was enjoying the sort of like the swing of redemption of Captain Cleaver, where she's almost finding her redemption, finding her forgiveness, finding her in the second part. And then in the third part, it's like it just kind of swung all the way back. And it was, I was reading it and I'm going, oh, I like what Andrew's doing here. You know, like, because what we saw in the third part is kind of scripted, what I've seen a million times. But how she kind of changed, I like that. And then I was like, okay, I can live with that. I'm happy with that. And then part three kind of went against that. And then I'm like, oh, that was a bit of a letdown. A letdown in the sense that I was...
Just a case of kids not listening to their parents again?
Yeah, well, that's never happened in the world, has it?
Yeah, see, I liked the story, and I didn't. I probably didn't enjoy part three as much as part two either. But I didn't mind the fact that this redemption arc that we thought she might be going on didn't turn out to be the case, because we've seen that story a million times as well. We've seen bad guys, and particularly the femme fatales, turn out to have a soft spot and all the rest of it. And it turns out, no, she does not have a soft spot at all. I don't think that the Captain Cleaver from Kid Phantom 3 I would have expected to turn out to be the Captain Cleaver from Ghost of Ship Past Part 3. Very different behavior, very escalated. I didn't mind that so much. I actually think that this, and I've just raved on about how much I enjoyed the Rack and Ruin stories coming together in the single book. I actually feel like this suffered from having the two parts right next to each other. I think it would have been better if they'd been in separate issues and had a bit more time to digest between them, because there was such a different vibe to the two stories, I suppose. I might be completely wrong. Maybe if they'd been in separate issues, I would have been going, oh, why not put them together? But I actually think that, I think this would have been better as giving a fortnight apart at least.
Interesting.
Yep, fair enough. But they would have had the annual in between, so they might have had to...
One was back in the 75th anniversary, wasn't it? So
in the previous issue that we discussed, no, sorry, two issues, 1959, which had Shane Foley's part story, we've seen this finished, but would have you preferred to see Shane Foley, like the next part of Shane Foley as well, or...
I guess...
Or are you happy to see another... start of a multi-part story?
There's clearly a lot of stories that Frew are juggling, and there's got a lot of things to consider. So this New Year's special, this New Year's book, the first book of the new year, over the last few years has become a colour issue. This was a colour issue. Jason Paulus, we know, colours his own work. Shane Foley's work was not coloured, and I don't think I've seen any of Shane Foley's. Oh, yeah, a couple, including in the special, but it wasn't coloured. That's probably a factor they've got to work through. I don't know. I think three small stories, and obviously Dudley's addressed that in his message from the publisher, three short part stories coming together in a single issue might be too much. I think I like one main story and then a small backup rather than three. And I know, you know, we've got two parts of this, so in a sense that is a main story. But as I said, I feel like it would have been better served being split out anyway. So anyway, what do I know? I'm just a numbnuts in Queensland who reads comic books. Dudley's a publisher who knows a lot more about what he's doing than I do.
Yep, and keep up the good work there, Dudley. Now, the third story is again done by Andrew Constant and Jason Paulus, and this is of Man and Beast Part 1. And it's a return to the world of Phantom by Gaslight, where the Phantom is in pursuit of one Dr. Jekyll, who happens to be seeking the service of another infamous doctor to aid him with his condition. So will Jekyll get the assistance that he is after, or will the Phantom overcome the guards and tan his hide with a skull mark before he goes too far?
You've really enjoyed writing these, haven't you, Tandy's Hollow?
I loved it. How can I get this in there? Oh, that's how I'm going to do it.
Now, I'm not a Gaslight fan, but I think I enjoyed this story this part. I think the first Gaslight suffered too much trying to cram too much into eight pages. And there was too many bad guys, and it was trying to be too clever, in a sense. And then I think it kind of also suffered in the sense that you had to wait a month between each part. And this is my other point, is that I would rather have part stories. If we're going to have part stories or multi-part stories, I would rather us only having one at a time. So now we've got... You know, we've got two. We've got a new Gaslight, and then we've got Shane Foley's. I would have rather us finishing Shane Foley's and then starting the Gaslight. Yeah, it makes sense, and I understand. You know, this being a Australian Andrew Constant and a Jason Paulus comic. You know, with them as the creative team, the cover artist, and all that type of stuff. But you know, the next time that there's going to be, because we've now got the annual, so then there's going to be a month. And then if you've got a new story in there, are you going to go with Gaslight or are you going to go with Shane Foley's story? And if Shane Foley's got three parts to it, that means we are now waiting almost 2-3 months before we're going to get the next part of the Gaslight story. And I think going on past experience, I think Heart of Darkness and the first Gaslight suffered because they were trying to combat and share space. So, that's my fear.
Could it be that, I don't know, in the next couple of issues, instead of having a main story and a backup story, or I shouldn't say main and backup, but a longer story and a shorter story, they go the three short story route. Like we have the Family Gaslight, we have the Let Them Help one, and maybe there's another one that comes along.
But then we're going to have Dan complaining that they should have been put into separate issues like he did 5 minutes ago.
I'm an old man. I complain about much.
That's it. That's it. But look, that's aside. I think I'm enjoying this Gaslight because I think, and I know this is going to sound bad, but I think these stories are a little bit more simpler and a little bit more fun-er. And a little bit less trying to take itself serious than what the first iteration of Gaslight is.
Yeah, I can understand what you're saying there, Jerm. I did enjoy this this Gaslight part more than I didn't enjoy the other ones, to be fair. And it is. It's probably because it's a simpler story and it's only got the three or four characters, not this cast of thousands. Even though the fandom does refer in the first panel or two to Julie and the third Phantom who's also running around London at this time in this premise. We don't see them. It's only this Phantom who's battling against the two Doctors. So and all of the horrors that they bring along. You mentioned there about the all Andrew Constant and Jason Palos issue. I don't know if that was intended as a special or just happenstance. I did see a couple of comments online about this being a pretty unique instance of an all Australian creative team from cover to cover for such a mainstream comic, particularly as a Fru, I suppose. And I can't remember off the top of my head. You'll probably rattle off six of them in a row, Jerm, but can't remember off the top of my head Fru comics with all Australian content creators from start to finish.
Okay. So besides the Kid Phantom issues, which there was...
10 of them.
10 of them. There was Keith Chaddo and Jim Shepherd's couple of their stories. Yeah, Rumble in the Jungle. So Keith did the
covers.
They were in the 90s. If we're talking about this century or this decade, Matt Kime, there'll be this one. There would be the three or four from Keith Chaddo and Jim Shepherd. There's the Kid Phantom ones, which are 10. So, look, you're looking at a guess, maybe 20.
And, look, there's been a lot more Australian creators involved in the fandom over the last 7 or so years with the new Fru crew. But giant sizes,
because a lot of the giants, if there's no backup Phantom.
Yeah, possibly.
But either way.
There's always one sneaky foreigner getting in there and drawing a cover or writing the story or whatever it might be.
Yeah, but no, it's a very good point. Yeah.
So well done on the all Australian issue to start off 2024.
The last thing I wanted to say about it too is similar to what I said about Shane Foley's artwork. I think Jason Palos's art is really coming along as well. And this is not to suggest that it was no good earlier, because I've enjoyed his work to a point along. But I think that his close-ups of the Phantom's faces in this, across all three stories, they're very different to the way he was drawing the Phantom when he first started, I think. And the desperation you can see on his face as he is gasping for air and coming up after 7 pages of battling sharks, the close-up profiles you see of the Phantom throughout all of the stories, I think that his take on the Phantom is really coming along as well.
Yep.
And his colours are really popping, particularly in the Gaslight. And also in the Gaslight, as Jim was going through it before, just remind me, how good he is at, we'll say horror, but it's close enough to a horror story, and how well his artwork works in that genre.
The Phantom by Gaslight, we see Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. We've also got Dr. Moreau. Those are characters whose copyright has expired, and so they can slip into stories like the Phantom. And perhaps we need to see, you talked about Batman with Santa Claus, maybe we need to see a Phantom with Steamboat Willie story coming out soon. And perhaps in 5 years, we'll see a lot more of the Phantom being used, appearing as a cameo or a secondary character in other stories a bit more often as copyright expires.
If there is an expert of the copyright law, please contact us, because I would love to be able to either explore this in a podcast or have an article about it. So if there is any fans out there that are copyright experts and understand it better than what I do, please get in contact with us.
As I mentioned, we're not going to discuss the annual of this podcast. That'll be next time. So now we have some reviews from the latest comics from around the world, including from Macau reviewing Phantom and comics from Sweden and Christian from Germany. Now, if you're from Greece, France, Hungary, or Brazil, and would like to review these comics for us, please contact us, and we look forward to hearing from you shortly. Anyway, take it away, Mikhail.
Phantomen Review.
New issue of Phantomen 2526 of 2023, so it's the last issue of the year, at least with the numbering. We have this amazing different looking cover by Luca Arbera, where the Mori girls get the focus, but we can still clearly see that it's a Phantom comic with the graffiti in the background, and it is filled with 100 pages of fun. We have some talk here about the Finnish and Norwegian Phantom publications. And then we have the main story. It is the Sunday story. What's it called in English? The Ingenuous. So, like in Swedish, it got translated to Big Town Trouble. Written by Tony DePaul and art by Jeff Weigel. The Mori has this, initiation right. And the girls are not allowed, so they take on them to create their own one, and they go to Mavitan, or Morristown as it is in Swedish, since they never changed the name there. And I like it, it's a bit different, some CD characters. Then we have the side comics, The Poisoner, or Levenin. The second and concluding part, and it's nudity. Don't look unless you're of age, of course. Yeah, it's. I think this is amazing. This is an amazing story. I'm really glad they picked this up for Phantomen. And after that, we get a Team Phantomen classic reprint, The Prisoner in Marrakesh, by Janne Lundström and Jaime Valve. Yeah, I'm not good at pronouncing names at all, I know. This time in color, which I really appreciate, as anyone who has seen any of my reviews know, I love when they put color on the stuff. And this one takes place at the end of Jane and the 19th Phantom's honeymoon, so right after Pidde Andersson's stories, but it was made long before, of course. Jane gets kidnapped by this really douchebag, and Phantom is not having it, and she's not having it either, I would say. Good classic Team Phantom story. Then we get a nice info about Luca Arbera more. From when Andreas was in Nice and met him, and we get some nice, see some nice other things he has done. Then we get the preview of the next issue. It will be the first issue 2024, but it will come out in the end of December, so it's basically still 2023. We will get Andreas Eriksson and Ivan Rodriguez Phantom, the slave hunter, the Sing Raiders, it's called in English, slave hunters from Sing. Yeah, that was in Fru in August, so it's good that we get it so close after. Looking forward to see that. Hope it's in color. And then we have Thorgal's Youth, part 1 out of 2, the Frozen Dragon Ship. And then we will get a poster of all the publication dates of 2024. Looking forward to that, and until that time, happy phantoming.
Today I do the Vic comic number 5 review. Let's start with some words from Ulrich Vic. He had a contract with King Futures, which allows him to release 700 pieces from this magazine, but it sold out very fast. Then the Swedish Fantomen magazine brings three stories from Ulrich, from magazine 1, the second story from magazine 2, the first story from magazine 3, the first story. If the Swedish Phantom magazine brings more, it is unknown. And with the sensational report, we have an unreleased story here, which Diana Palmer helped her publisher to get a report about the treasures of the Phantom. And it's a cool story, black and white if you see it. And the Pirate Friend, it's released in the Bastai magazine, 230. Then I switch to page 37, which it starts. And then you see the impressum. Then we continue with the story. I like both stories very much. The quality is, like always, awesome from Vic Comics. The paper is high quality. And yeah, like I said, the stories, I like it much. And then we have an interview with Peter Manningen, who wrote the stories here, and he tells about his work with the Bastai publisher, and it continues in Phantom magazine number 6, which I review next. Thank you for watching. Goodbye. Today I do the review from Vic Comics number 6. This time the Vic comic comes in full color for €12.50, and it's taken from the old Phantom Spezial magazine, which I show you right now. That's the old one, number 37, from 1981. Just a quick look. And now we start with the Uranium Trap from Vic Comics. Imprint, then, like I said, it's full color, which I find awesome. I like full color comics. I read the first Bastai comics and they were colored too. And in this story, some pirates steal the uranium container, and it's a cool story from Peter Manningen. Again, he's a machine, wrote in comic stories here in Germany. Yeah, and we have the interview part 2, then the original cover from the Phantom Spezial magazine, also listed here. And then we are done with the Vic Comics. 6 more to go. Can't wait. Today we review the Zauberstern comic number 10, which features the DC miniseries from 1988, 1 to 4. And this time we had the cover, and it starts right now with the comic, with the story. I like the comic story very much, but the jumping from the old to new story, it's not mine. I don't like the jumping between the, I say, two worlds. It's not a thing that I like very much. And the paintings, I don't know. I miss the details. It don't flash me, I must say it. But the story, like I said, it's really cool. And it's the 13th and 21 Phantom. It's old generation and new generation. But the paintings, I don't know. It's really not mine. I know some like this DC style or whatever you called it, but doesn't touch my heart. Here again, another page. I don't know how to describe it, but it's cool that Zauberstern do every time another story, something new. But in this time, I mean, the magazine has 100 pages and this time no ads, no poster, just comics for under 10 euros, 9.99. But I don't know, really, it's not my painting style. I don't like the paintings. The story is cool, like I said times before, but also the jumping old to new one, I don't know. Then we are finished in seconds. And the next Zauberstern Phantom magazine comes out in 6th February 2024. And in Zauberstern number 10, it's called Der Wandelnde Geist. It's from the DC series, number 1. Schatten der Vergangenheit, Zeit der Vergeltung und das Phantom schlägt zurück. Cover ist dann bei Joe Orlando und Dave Gibbons. Übersetzung Thomas Rippert. Lettering und Layout Michael Beck. And the all-known Beck story. And we are done yet. Thanks for watching. Have a nice day.
Thank you very much, fellas. Now we're on to the newspaper stories, the Daily and Sunday Progress. Now, Daily 264 has finished. Was it Journey Home? Was that what it's called?
Yeah.
Make sure I get this right. Long Journey Home. But whose journey home was it?
I was love it that bit.
Savannah's? Was it Kit's? Was it the Phantoms? Whose journey home was it? I thought that was really well done to end up that way.
Yeah,
and obviously you did too, Jan.
Yeah, because we knew the end date between what Tony said, what Jeff had said, what Mike had said, and what we put all together. We knew the end date. I think, Dan, you pieced it together and you were actually correct as well. So,
can you timestamp this for me, please, Steve? Because yeah. I need to snip this piece of audio.
That's it. And then that way when the kids give you grief next, you can say, no, I was right. I was right at least once. But so I was wondering how they're going to get another week out of it. And then you've got, we'll start at the end, then you've got this bit here, and then you've got the week of the journey home, you know, where the Phantom asks, whose journey home was it? Was it the sons? Was it the old man Moz's home for the innocent? I actually forgot about the innocent, so I thought that was great how they re-included them. And it's like, oh, yes. It's like another story thread that is there that maybe Tony DePaul or maybe someone else could look at a later date. Then you've got the journey home. And then, as I think you kind of only pick it up a couple of days in, the other panel of the Phantom is actually moving as well. So I thought that was very well done by Jeff, and it zooms in closer and closer and closer. And then you've kind of got the end, which sees the bit which obviously was in a potential future. That's where the Phantom is buried.
Well,
he's
very firm. That is locked in. As far as he's concerned, that is how the Phantom dies, and that's where he's buried.
Yeah, shot in India, and that's
well,
his grave.
The how, words here say...
The circumstances around why he's buried there could be slightly different, but that's where he ends up.
Yeah,
the words. So the words say, and I think this was a brilliant way of ending it. I think it's like we did all those 2 years, and we still don't know. And I thought that was really good. So if my ultimate destiny hasn't been altered, it could have been, it could have not been. The mysteries of fate will one day send me to India to search for my son. But if that day should never come to pass, maybe the journey home wasn't mine. Was mine as well. So I loved the way the ending of the story. Like for me, I ended the story and I'm like, I can breathe. And I'm like, I like that ending. It was like, you know, it wasn't an ending, but it was an ending. And I can close the Chronicles of Old Man Moz and I can get on with the next story. So I was kind of happy with that.
And the fact that it ends with him sitting in the chair too, he's journeying home, he's in his place, he's in his skull cave, he's on his throne. And if, actually, can you go dial back a couple of days? I can't remember who said this, but I remember reading a comment saying that he's, particularly in the earlier of the week, that he looks kind of Ray Moore-ish. Not there, of course.
I think it was Wilson McCoy-ish.
Wilson McCoy, I should say.
Yeah.
Bit of a throwback, whether that was done intentionally or just occurred that way.
I thought it was a very good point that they made about that.
I
was thinking, where's the charm?
I was about to say, before, as you're just flicking through there, I was just going to try and see if there was a depiction of different art styles, but there really wasn't. Now he's sitting on the chair chair, and we notice that there's no chain there. Now, the chain has... been a big bugbear for you there, Jervis. You go on about this story. I think it must be one of your favourites because you talk about it a lot. Well, you always give props to creators who add the chain in, and you always complain when people don't put the chain in. And, well, it just so happens that Daily 265 is a story called The Chain. Phantom has woken up and is complaining or he's commenting about this dream, and everyone thinks, oh, crap, he hasn't done the old... Rackham was all just a dream. No. He hasn't done that to us. He's just gone through this huge saga, finally had a good night's sleep, and he's dreaming about having a chain on his chair. Absolutely confusing the heck out of him. But now he's going to retell the dream. Hopefully he can tell it properly. I don't know about you, but when I have a dream, I have to either write it down or say it straight away, otherwise you forget it. So straight away, he's telling Diana his dream because he's woken up quite perplexed. But a big shout out to Brett here on this panel, 17th of the 1st, because I remember that old man in the original chain story appearing. What was his name? Wobu or something like that?
Woru.
That doesn't even sound like a Bandar name.
Now, I wonder how many fans have actually gone back and read the chain story.
I haven't yet. I've
gone back and read it, and in reading this first week, which is all we've seen at the moment, you know, talking about how he was a selfish, overgrown toddler with an ego that wouldn't quit. I think there was the word ignoramus, man baby, jerk. I went back and I read it, and I'm like, yeah, Tony DePaul's got a point there.
I I really love this bit of dialogue on the 19th of January. Darling, you know I would never marry a man, baby. Oh, I had offers. Every girl does. Happy, baby. But I chose you. And that is so true. When you think of the Diana, the Wilson McCoy, and the Raymore Diana, she did have a lot of big babies chasing after her and dictators who were going to throw the toys out of the cot if they couldn't marry her and all that sort of stuff. There was a lot of men babies chasing after Diana. Yes. But she chose him.
Yeah.
Yeah. The ultimate anti-man, baby.
And then, like, the bit on 20 where, you know, it says, my father entrusted a vital message I would hear one day, I would one day need to hear to a little man, you know, and then it's, you know, what is it, a little man who might kick the bucket any minute. Foolproof move, 20 of Phantom. It's obvious that Tony DePaul is having a little bit of fun with this story about and if you go back and read the story, which I have, there's no mention of the Chronicles. There's, you know, you've got this guy who's only ever appeared once, never appears again. And, you know, yeah, I love this story. You know, I thought the moral of the story of the chain was really good, but the way it was portrayed and the portrayal of the Phantom is not Phantom-like. And I'm interested to see where Tony is going with this. And I fear that he may turn me off that story.
I think that might be his goal, don't you think? Was it in conversations with us on the podcast or something like that when we told him about this, or you would have mentioned it somewhere? And that just got his brain ticking on it. I think he's been... might have been piecing this together. And I, for one, really appreciate it because we've had this deeply serious story for the last couple of years. This one has started off fun already.
Yeah.
Which is a nice relief after the big hearty meal that's been the record.
And to be honest, we did call for it. We called after this story finishes if we can have a more
lighthearted
story. And so far, the first week in, we have gotten that. Whether we're going to get that full on, or you know,
part of it, I think, is because Brett Blevins might think that he's drawing for a Colgate commercial. Everybody's smiling and got a huge white teeth. There really is.
Couldn't see them smiling.
I don't know. I'm enjoying it, but it just adds to that lightheartedness, that fun, that, you know, everyone's joking around, and it's like that they finished this epic adventure that we'll have, and they're having a bit of a laugh about this one that's going forward. So they're working well together to convey that spirit.
Okay, so quick quiz. I get the feeling this is going to be a short story, and I get the feeling this is going to be 3 weeks. This story is going to be 3 weeks. What are
three
you
weeks?
Yeah.
There's no way it's going to be 3 weeks.
No.
He's got to retell the dream. Well, it's then there's going to be something. Yeah. Then they've got to do something about this chain. He's got to investigate it for himself. There's got to be more than that. There's got to be a story behind the story.
I give it at least 12.
Okay.
At least 12 weeks.
Yeah, it's closer to 3 months at least.
All right, so Steve's going a mini epic of 3 months. I'm going super short.
That's not mini epic. That'd be a normal 30-page story.
And Dan's going somewhere in between, more towards what Steve is.
It's also about 3 months.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Cool bananas. No, I don't know. I just got a sneaking suspicion it's going to be a short story.
Well, short compared to the rack and roll.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
We do know from whether it was a throwaway line in the blog and whether, I don't know, it'd be interesting to know whether Tony regrets having written this now as a reply to someone who was on a comment. He probably didn't expect that there'd be screenshots of it posted by Chronicle Chamber all over social media, where he says something about the next story is we're taking a classic and removing it from the,
striking it from the law, I think he said.
Striking it from the law. And that means he's planning on blowing up the chain. And I don't know about that. I like that. I've got my own little skull cave over there. I don't know if you skull throne over there. I've got a chain hanging on the side of that. I like the chain. I hope at the end of the story, maybe the reason or how it got there is different, but I still want it to be there.
So for those who are interested, we do have an article. We will link it in the show notes where we actually explore the chain. So what you may actually be interested in, and it's kind of interesting because the last week of the Rack and Ruin saga actually featured the Phantom with no on the Skull Throne with no chain. So it's like we saw the Skull Throne with no chain for about a week. And it was curious. I wonder if that was created a bit of a lot. Yeah, intentional. I reckon it was.
Well, it have to be because, you know, the next day or two he's gone, I had a dream there was a chain on the throne. What the hell was that about?
Yeah. So a couple of fans actually started thinking about, well, hang on, has the chain actually been done? Now, we'd already done that research. We'd posted this article about probably a good, probably 2 years ago, maybe 3 years ago. Now, the chain has never, ever been portrayed in a daily or newspaper, a daily or Sunday newspaper story since 1953 when this original story was published. So we will likely see the chain on the Skull Throne coming up, and that will be the first time that's ever happened. Now, in comics, there was only one comic between 1950s and 1996 that actually had a chain on the cover, and that was a French or Italian story. Now, the first time that the chain had appeared again was actually with the movie, for those who remember the 1996 Billy Zane movie. And then Sal Velluto included it on a couple of covers, and then it kind of came back into vogue, and Paul Mason was the next person to actually include it in a story in one of his Kid Phantom stories. So, look, full story on the article, but it's never actually been included again. And, yeah, so I got a bit of a theory behind that, and I got feeling that maybe Lee Falk didn't actually write this story, but that's just my personal little theory. And I'll be real quick. I'm not ready to make a judgment on Brett's artwork in 1 week of strips, but for you guys, and I'm going to ask you to put it on the line. When will you make a decision on Brett's artwork, on the quality and stuff? Like, when is enough of a time for you to be able to say yes or no? For me, it's after 3 weeks. I personally have, especially in a daily, where 3 weeks of six strips, that's 18 times two, so 30 odd panels of the Phantom. I think by then I'm ready to make a judgment call on Brett's art.
It's a really hard question to answer. Because every artist should have the license to depict the fan or the hero or whatever work that they're doing their way. And you hear countless times, we want it done in the same fashion as X. And, you know, in regards to the Phantom, it's, you know, Cy Barry Phantom. No, I want to see the Jeff Weigel Phantom. I want to see the Mike Manley. Yep. I want to see the Jason Polis. I want to see the Paul Mason. I want to see different artists' depiction of the Phantom. Now, we've got Brett Blevins. I did a little bit of research, it was 5 minutes. But he's done a lot of work for DC, a lot of work for Marvel, X-Men or New Mutants type stuff. He did some stuff with Batman Adventures or Superman Adventures. He's done a lot of storyboard work. And a judgment on his art is probably not the right question to ask. He's obviously a great artist, great illustrator, whatever term you want to use. He's been doing this for a long, long time. It's more whether you like his depiction of the Phantom or not. You know, the Blevins Phantom as opposed to the Manly Phantom. And you say 3 weeks. I think it'd probably take you 3 weeks for your eyes or your brain to adjust to to a new style.
Yeah, I made that point earlier. Very good point.
So I reckon in 3 weeks' time, you're not even going to be thinking about do I like it or not. This is just the Phantom.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So,
and I said before also about Paulos and Foley that I thought that their work had grown and matured and developed, and I was enjoying it more. Maybe that's I've adjusted to their style, and it doesn't is well. It's not unfair, I don't think, to say that Jason Paulos's art was a bit jarring in the first instance because it was so different to what I'd seen before. Whether he's become more like what I was used to, or I've gotten more used to him. Either way, I like it more than I did. And I think, you know, artists are like anyone else in their jobs. They have good days and bad days and up and down and all the rest of it. So, yeah, I'm a bit like Steve. I'm not prepared to put a date on it. I think we just, you know, get in and enjoy it. And, you know, Cy Barry changed his style, and he would say quite deliberately, over a period of time. And changed and adapted, and people grew to love that. And maybe that's only because he did it for 30 years and it was all everybody knew. And so that's just what they were used to. So, yeah, I can understand what people are saying. His faces are a little bit more elongated. I said before about the Colgate commercial in jest there. I think we need to see his Phantom in a range of situations, not just this happy smiling around the breakfast table, but what's he going to look like when he's in danger and a fight scene and all these sorts of things. So there's a lot to weigh up. And, yeah, I don't hate it. You know, I'm no art critic, but I know what I hate, and I don't hate this. I'm paraphrasing it from someone.
I remember us having similar conversations when Manly took over. There were times when his artwork looked really good, and there was times when it didn't really look that crash hot. But after being more familiar with the character and your drawing, right, and you realize you're finding your style now. Yeah. And it's even true for people with as much experience as Manly, as much experience as Brett, that they, you know, they have their style, but they're always still finding their style for a particular character. And so now Brett's had to, you know, pitch in and do work while Mike's been away. Now he's got a bit of space now to do his own stuff with his own story. So it'd be interesting to see how, more time, do it well. So it'd be interesting to see how he shapes his character and says, there were elements in that first panel. The points on his cowl were a bit, off. Or, let's see how he gets that face going, because it'll be a lot of close-ups this past week, working on that. Then, like you say, with the action, let's see how that works. And that's the way he moves. That's the way. How's he built? Is he, the overly muscular, as we were talking about in the Anthony Spey? Or is he going to be the more life Phantom, the more, So we're saying 3 weeks. We'll probably take a good month just to see what type of Phantom Brett's going to give us and what type of Phantom he's going to settle on. Is not the word, but settle on is the word I'm going to use.
Well, even that point you made there before, we haven't really seen a full-length Phantom yet of his, have we? They've all just been close-ups.
There was one or two, but, yeah, you're right. A lot of them are close-ups. Look, brilliant point about us. Maybe the problem is us not being used to change. Love that point. Might have been one of your best points you've ever made on the podcast, so thank you for that. The other one, or that is always...
You're always improving, always getting better.
Yeah, the other point that is worth, and this will be my last point on this and then we can move on, the other point that is worth remembering is that Cy Barry was told to change his style and to be more like Wilson McCoy when he first took over the strip. And there were people saying, who is this? It's not my Phantom. I'm not reading the strip anymore. So if that happens to Cy Barry, who is the grandfather or the mafia boss of the Phantom, it can happen to anyone.
Okay. We've got a Sunday story going on at the moment and talking about, blowing up things. He's not blowing up the well, but he's doing something with the unknown commander. And the name of the story is The Commander Will See You Now, where, I think in the last few weeks he's been changing up things in the unknown commander's office. Well, now that we're looking back a few weeks now, there was still some of that John Q stuff going on. But in comes a foreman coming to do some renovations at Jungle Patrol headquarters. Colonel Warrabool is wondering what the heck is going on here. And he's kept telling him, I'm on the orders by the commander, done this, we've got to do that. And he's stuck in his ways. He doesn't want this change. And really, in today's strip, I feel that Colonel Warrabool really is the personalization of all of us fans who like things just the way they are. And the foreman is reassuring us that...
Steve.
And the foreman is reassuring us that everything will be all right. Now, whether that's Tony letting us know that everything's going to be all right, or whether it's KFS, everything will be okay. We're in safe hands. You don't have to worry. The unknown commander will still be the unknown commander. Phantom is still the Phantom. We're just going to change it a little.
Yeah.
Must admit, I had a little physical reaction at the panel where the light bulb got snipped off the wall. You know, that in every Phantom story with and Germ's just bringing it up on YouTube again so that I can just have that right in front of my face. But the Phantom, the unknown commander, has left instructions for the jungle patrol because the lamp's lit. That's been the law my entire life. I'm nearly half a century old, and suddenly the lamp's been clipped off the wall. I'm like, what? That was a little bit shocking. And I can understand. Yeah, I'm with you, Stephen. I'm General Warbur at the moment, Colonel Warbur at the moment, going, what are you doing? Well, you're putting windows in the office. People will see. The one point that I have been reassured by, like you said there, is that the safe doesn't move, and the commander's given explicit instructions that the safe doesn't move. Everything else is changing, but the safe is there. So,
You need to have a constant. The safe is the constant.
Well, they're not going to find the tunnel.
And, and the thing is the Jungle Patrol, and this is another big bugbear of mine, is that the Jungle Patrol is always portrayed as an overgrown Boy Scouts brigade. The Jungle Patrol, as portrayed by Lee Fork when it was founded by pirates, Redbeard and his henchmen, and then in the patrolman of the story about patrolman Zocco, is that there's 1,000 people trying to apply for the fans to become a Jungle Patrol person every year, and out of 1,000, only 10 people are chosen. So, you know, one out of whatever that is, one out of 100 people are chosen. So it's the elite of the elite. It's like the CIA, FBI, of Africa, the top of the top fighting force, people all around the world join to become the Jungle Patrol. And hopefully we will kind of see a little bit of the Jungle Patrol, a little bit more modern, a little bit more a better fighting force. And I struggle with the idea and with change as well. I'm now over 40, so I'm now old like the rest of us Phantom Raiders. But I'm hoping that we're going to see a return of the Jungle Patrol being a proper fighting force, keeping peace, solving crime, being the FBI, the CIA, the Department of Defense, the cutting edge. So I'm hoping I'm looking forward to what they're going to do.
I think we all are. It'll be interesting to see what happens.
Both of the Daily and the Sunday at the moment have got me hooked. I want to see the next installment of both of them every day.
The one thing that intrigues me is that comment that we put up on social media of Tony DePaul's these stories. It almost feels like Tony DePaul is setting himself up for the end of his reign writing Phantom stories. It just feels like, he's now showed us how the 21st Phantom dies. He's showed us a potential possible end. He's modernizing the Jungle Patrol. He's getting rid of crappy legacy stories like The Chain. It just feels like he's kind of gearing up a little bit.
Yeah, you might be onto something. I mean, he's been doing it for 25 years or thereabouts now, getting up towards 25 years. And
writing Phantom stories for close to a decade before that as well.
Before that as well, but on the dailies for that sort of that 25 year period, and the Sundays, whether he would under the end's in sight for all of us so sooner rather than later for others, and whether there's just a bucket list of things that he's always wanted to do and he's like, oh, I better actually get in, and if I've been saying to myself for 10 years I was going to update the commander's office, I better actually write that story, that sort of thing. So whether he has got a fixed date in mind, I mean, it's a whole another podcast where we talk about, well, what happens to the newspaper strip if Tony DePaul ever decides to, or when Tony DePaul decides that enough's enough.
We will, know, I think we will play Nostradamus and discuss that in a podcast, a bit of a fun podcast. I think that could be interesting.
I think it's less him, what, you know, going away from the strip, and more, as he said on numerous occasions, the death of the newspaper comic strip, and just always making sure that whatever is going to be the last story is going to be a great last story. And, you know, seeing this, the law, the chain, you know, let's fix that up, okay? And if this is ever going to be the last story that the newspaper lets me print, then this is what I'm going. All right, got the unknown commander and the safe in the office. Well, let's fix that up a bit. Now, if that's the last story that the newspaper ever lets me print, well, that's the, I'm happy with that. And I think he's said on record a number of times that, you know, if this is the last story before they pull the plug, I'm happy with it. So, yeah. Which is actually a good place to be, because you know you're always going to try and get a really good story each time. He's not going to let it be on life support.
Feels like he's trying to make the legacy or the lore better than what he picked it up. So however he leaves it, whether it's King Features pull the pin on the newspaper strip or he pulls the pin, he's trying to leave the strip in a better place than what it was when he picked it up.
And that's what you'd want, isn't it?
That's what you should do. That's what everyone should do.
In any industry.
Yes. Please, Tony, if you listen to this or anyone else, I'm not saying you need to give it up.
Oh, no, please don't. Heck no.
You've got to keep writing until we're dead.
Yeah. And he's got a few years on us. So he's got
even though he's almost old enough to be our dad.
Moving on. Talking about art. Talk about art there for a while, but we've got the Bundaberg Phantom Art Exhibition, which is closing soon. It's been going from the 18th of November, and it's going to be wrapping up on the 4th of February. Now, we have heaps of audio, video, and photos about this on our website. We've done it on the podcast. Thank you to everyone who sent us stuff through on that. Okay, and please leave us a comment if you've seen it, or if you've got more photos. We'd love to see them all. There's a new Phantom-themed beer that's been released over in Finland. I'll get there in the end. But this is the same brand who did it the last time. So this time we've got new images, correct?
The same brewery, yes. Different taste or different beer, flavour, whatever word you want to use. I'm one of the ones drinking water or milk. Different themed images. So these are Rolf Gulf's images from Phantom Men covers, and it's a different flavor of the beer. Now, look, people are wanting to know, the number one question anyone's going to ask is, how can I get some? You can't get the beer out of Finland. It's a lot harder. So you can't go onto their website and order a slab and bring it to you, because there's import export taxes and problems and stuff like that. Your best bet is to find a guy from Finland who can go to his local bottle-o. They are in the local bottle-o, but they have a different, obviously a different name for it, a local bottle shop. Get them to order them for you, and then you can smuggle them into your own country. That's the best way of doing it. Now, what I want to know is, Mikkel is planning on going to Finland soon to be able to review the beers for us. He's going to give us a taste test and review the images and all that. But if there is
anyone for the team, thanks, Mike.
He is taking one. Yeah. So
very noble.
Very noble. But if there's anyone in the meantime who can do that before, obviously, you know, Mikkel actually has to go to Finland. But if there's anyone who can drink it, do a review for us of Series 1 and Series 2 beer beforehand, please get in touch with us. And heck, I will even buy the beer for you. But you have to review it, and then you got to send them to me, the empty can.
And the empties.
All right, but I will buy you a beer, literally, if you can do a review for Chronicle Chamber. That's how much I want a beer review on our website.
Oh, it's how much you want a beer can in your display cabinet.
I've actually got the labels, like the stickers, before they went onto the beer cans. But yes, I would like some empty ones. But
well, how about one better? How about we get a Finnish person to buy the beer, then come over to Australia, do a tour of Australia. You can see Victoria, you can go see Queensland, you can go see WA. And as you go, just come over and have a beer and just BYO and we'll enjoy it with you.
If that's going to happen, I am not paying for your airfares or your, I'm only paying for the beer. Stephen, I'm not sure if your job pays more than me, but I'm not paying
for it. I know someone who's already coming over for a trip, but there's no way I can, otherwise I'd be over there.
They could have accommodation here for a couple of nights and it only cost them a 4-pack.
But look, jokes aside, we would love to be able to see someone review tasting the beer for our website. So please, if you are from Finland or if you're from Norway and Sweden and you are going to Finland in the immediate future and you can review and want to do that for us, please contact us.
Next up, we have Mad Cave Studio have announced that they're going to be releasing a Defenders of the Earth trade paperback in the middle of the year. So this is a collection of the Marvel / Star comics from 1986 or 7, around that time anyway, whenever they were published. It's the four parts, which leaves us to wonder how they're going to fill out the pages, because I think in the article it says 96 pages. There wasn't that many pages in the original series. So will they have the unpublished fifth part? Will they have interviews with the creators? Will they have some extra art from Alex Zabiel? Who knows? But depending on which website you go to, July or August, it's going to be sometime in the middle of the year this will be released, and released in actual bookshops so people can actually get their hands on it.
It would be nice to see the unpublished issue 5, and there's actually a few images floating around of some parts of issue 6 as well. So that would be pretty cool. I find it interesting that Herms have not done it, because Herms did, the DC, the King Charlton and all that, and then they kind of stopped at, they didn't do the Marvel stories. So I find that interesting.
Well, they've only just finished doing the DC ones, though, haven't they? Maybe they're just
about a year. It was over a year ago, so back in 2022. So I'm intrigued of where Mad Cave Studios are going. They've also got the license for Flash, so it's intriguing where they're going with that. I wonder now, we discussed the possibility that Defenders of the Earth was going to make a return in 2024 in our last podcast. We actually said that before this news came out. So it'll be interesting whether they've got the license for Flash, whether they have room in their license to be able to add the Phantom and Mandrake, who have got their license with Moonstone, to be able to do a new Defenders of the Earth stories.
Dan, have you read the original comics?
Yeah, I have. Not for a while now. I would absolutely pick up a copy of a compilation trade paperback of these for sure. And the simple maths that you mentioned there before, 96 pages is more pages than there are pages in the comic books. That's intriguing, and I'm really keen to see what they flesh it out with. So middle of the year, I think what that puts it in Australia, maybe August-ish, it would probably get over here and we'd be able to have access to it here. So, looking forward to that.
Okay. Now, there's news that Frew have released digital comics. Now, I'm thinking this is their 2022 publications. Is that right? I'm getting nods from Jermaine. So that way people can still have to buy the physical copy if they want the later stories. But for those people who'd like to read their comics digitally, you can pick up the 2022 issues.
Is dead simple is the answer. You go on the Frew website, any of the 2022 releases, when you go to purchase it, there's a drop down box basically, and it says, do you want to purchase the physical copy or the digital copy? That's not the language they use, but those are the options. If you choose digital copy, you pay for it, and the next screen says, thanks for your payment, here's the link. And the link is also emailed to you. So you've got that link instantaneously. You press on the link, you're actually reading the comic within literally minutes, depending on your download speed. For me, it was about 30 seconds after I pressed, yeah, I think I want to buy this, that I had the PDF in front of me. It's a PDF, so it can be read on any platform. You don't need a particular piece of software or whatever. You can save it in your File Explorer and all the rest of it. It's an interesting thing because it is also very easy to then share that. And we tested that here, and the 36-page issue was a small enough file that you can just send it in Messenger to other people. So I guess for taking a punt there on the honesty and the integrity of Phantom fans, they have covered themselves a little bit. I can't then just go and print comics myself because every page of the PDF has got a watermark on it stating my email address and the date and the time I made the purchase. It's not even a watermark. It's actually up there in the header. So that is my copy. If that gets loose and you know, I send it to this group, if you guys are suddenly going to go share it to everybody, that can be tracked back to me. So I guess that will probably help people show honesty. But in terms of a process, dead set simple. The quality of the print is outstanding because, of course, it's not actually on the dodgy paper that people don't like in Fruit Comics. I got a regular issue. I also picked up the Masked Marvel special, and the colors that I saw on my screen would have been exactly the same as the colors that Paul Mason saw on his screen when he sent it into Fruit. So you can't quibble about that. That was really good.
What was the price on it, Dan?
I think it was the same price off the top of my head. I don't think it was. I think it was the same as cover price.
No, I think it was cheaper than cover price.
Was it?
I think it was about 60% of the cover price from memory. Okay. I think that's one of the reasons why they've done like the previous year, like 2022. So like they'll release every year, a year behind.
Yeah.
So I think that's a great way of doing it because, you know, they're not losing out money on new comics. And I think what's going to happen is it's going to allow people, and I've talked to quite a few fans from US, from India, and all these type of people who buy a bulk comic. So they're a year or two behind and they buy 20 issues at a time. And so what this is going to allow them to do, they can trial and test if they want this comic before they go and buy it. So they might like, oh, I'm not sure about this one. Oh, let's buy the download one. You know, it's only going to cost me $2. And if you're in the US, it's going to cost you even less because, you know. And then they're like, oh, I really like this story. I'll include that when I buy my next batch. It's reaching a wider audience and that's what Fruit should be doing. They should be trying to reach a wider audience. So I reckon it's a good move.
Yeah. I really hope they've got a good uptake of it. They probably haven't, as is Fruit style, probably haven't advertised it heavily enough. Do people even know? You know, if they haven't seen our web article, if they haven't seen our posts on it, would you know? Because I can't remember it being mentioned in a message from the publisher. It's certainly not, it's not splashed at the front of the top of the website that digital downloads are suddenly available. So anyway, hopefully they get a good uptake on it and we'll see how it goes.
Yeah. I don't think it'll affect physical purchase, purchasing of a physical copy, at least here in Australia. But your point there, Jim, about the internationalists, getting in the physical copy, maybe that might put a dent in there because now you can just get it digitally.
But
you know, there have to be a hardcore collector to still want the physical.
Do you think that more fans will buy the digital ones because they're like, well, hang on, I can buy a whole year of 2022 comics, and it's going to work out cheaper than buying half the comics and getting them sent to me.
Yeah,
so
I think
you might sell more because they're like, well, you know, I don't have to worry about postage anymore. So I don't know. Maybe another option is where people can actually buy the whole year of comics. You know, instead of having to individually add them to the cart, there could be an option where people can go, I want to buy all of 2022 issues for $200 or whatever it is.
Whatever it is. Yeah.
And then they can buy that whole year.
Through best of 2023 results. That was our last podcast, wasn't it? So, yes, listen to podcast 271 for more information, including our reactions and opinions on that. And hopefully those people who got their, who won the awards at the end, you know, the randomly drawn prizes, you hopefully you'll be getting your prizes very, very soon. The Phantom Men Best Adventure for 2023 vote, it is now open. It ends on the 4th of April. There are 7 new previously unpublished Team Phantom Men stories. There are 8 new previously unpublished newspaper stories. There are 9 new previously unpublished Frew Creators stories. Really good to see that one in there. There are 8 previously published Team Phantom Men stories. There are 3 colored for the first time, and there are 7 of the 32 stories published have not been published in a Frew comic before. 7 of those stories from last year haven't made it to Frew yet.
Yeah, so all so what it means is that if you are a Frew reader, there's basically 2/3, if not, what's that? 7 times 3, so yeah, 14, 21, 28. So there's a quarter. There's a quarter of those stories that have been published in Phantom Men for 2023 you haven't seen, but 3/4 of those stories you have seen, so you would be able to vote for those stories if you are a fan, if you are a Frew reader. So there's no reason for Frew readers not to be able to vote for this.
Not to have a go. Unless one of those 7 stories are actually the best ones.
Especially since we've got 3 months to do it. That's a... It seems like a really long time, and I'm a little bit surprised every year by Phantom Men that they have their best of the previous year competition ending so late in the next year. But anyway, that's just me.
It gives her a chance to publish those other 7 stories, you see. So
well, that's true.
Hoping not to a mad dash by April. Okay, what have we got here? Editions Dante New Products, lithograph set. New Moonstone Trade Paperback Volume 3 released in March 2024. Editions Dante, where is that from again?
That is a French publisher, are now publishing more Phantom. In 2023, they didn't publish the Phantom, but in 2024, they are publishing another trade paperback, which is going to be released in March 2024, and that's going to include Moonstone stories. So, you know, it's brilliant timing, because if you're in France and you're like, what's this about Moonstone producing Phantom stories? You can then kind of catch up with what Editions Dante are doing. And they've also got a lithograph set, which has got a whole bunch. I think it's 9 Phantom posters, new artwork. So check out our website, check out our link. It's kind of got a noir style to it, the lithograph set. I haven't brought a set yet. I probably will, but I will probably buy it when the Moonstone trade paperback comes out as well. So I will probably buy trade paperback 1, 2, and 3, and then try and probably buy the lithograph set as well if it's available.
Well, and that'll be the thing, isn't it? Because there's only 100 copies of it. So, you know, you can take the punt and go, well, I'll buy them both at the same time and save postage, which makes complete sense. But with only 100 out there, limited editions, you've always, you roll the dice when you do that, don't you? So,
yeah. So I guess that's where you kind of hope that Chronicle Chamber is not good at it, what it's supposed to do, and don't let too many people know.
Why did we mention it on the podcast?
Now, from a little bit of fun to a bit of sad news, Walmir Marl has passed recently. That news came to us from Helio Guerra and Andreas Eriksson. For those who don't know, Walmir was a Brazilian artist. He began his professional life when he was just 17 years old. He was born back in 1939, so he's had decent innings. Now, you might not be familiar with his work, or it might not be a name that goes to the top of your head when you're thinking about the Phantom. But we have seen his work here in Australia. From what I can see here in the Chronicle Chamber article, Phantom's World number 8, I think, was the story. Yes. Operation Brazil. What else we got? Our research shows that 2 Brazil RGE creator stories being published by Frew and not by any other publisher. One of those is Operation Brazil, and another story was 1763, but that wasn't... That hasn't been credited to him, but it is another Brazilian story nonetheless.
So I've got a sketch cover by him. This is the sketch cover that he did for me probably about 2 years ago during the pandemic. So, yeah, look, lovely guy. I've got a note that he wrote me a note. He didn't speak, from what I understand, he didn't speak English. So I had to go through a friend and then his daughter. But he was rather excited that there were Australians that were not only reading his work, but also Australians that were fans of what he had done and stuff like that. And let's be honest, leaving a legacy where we're going to be, one, talking about you after you die and probably for, you know, a lot longer, and treasuring his work and all that. That's an awesome legacy to leave behind.
Yeah, and even though we might not have heard him over here, he was quite big over in Brazil, is that?
Yeah, so he was huge. Like, he's probably one of the most well-known big Brazilian artists, because he actually produced a lot of work. So not only did he do Phantom work, he did a lot of covers, did a lot of stories, but he also did stories for a lot of other characters as well. So, you know, think of like a Paul Chapman or, you know, something like that from an Australian point of view that has left a great local legacy. That's what he has done. So, like, you talk to any of these other Brazilian artists that we've seen in Fru. So whether it's Adorio, Rafael Dantes, Adorio Beretta, Figueiredo, Diaz and Wendell Cavalanti, they all looked up to Wellmuir's artwork and praised him. And I've seen, you know, their comments on their Facebook pages saying, you know, that they admired him, they looked up to him, that he was one of the heroes and stuff like that. So that's who he is to a lot of Brazilian artists, and a lot of Brazilian artists that we admire, that we like, who have drawn the Phantom, you know, grew up on his Phantom.
A little bit closer to home now, we have some Australian comic creators who are being recognised or having their work displayed over in China at the Australian Comics Exhibition in Chengdu, China. I'm reading that correctly. Paul Mason is one of them. I think he's had work over in China before,
Thailand.
Was that Thailand? My mistake. And Marcelo Bays is also getting a Guernsey in this exhibition.
It's great to see, and I'm not sure how much of their work of their Phantom work is going to be up in China. I haven't figured that one out. Maybe we need to ask, you know, we might ask Paul and Marcella if that is the case, or whether it's their non-licensed work that is showcased. But the fact is that, you know, there's potentially some Phantom artwork going to a country where, from what we understand, Phantom hasn't been published before in China. So potential new readership could be seeing the Phantom, could be, you know, not only is it from, that's great, but it's also great for the actual artists and the creators as well to, you know, there's about 20 different creators from Australia who are going to have their work displayed and looked at by a potential whole new audience, which is absolutely amazing. Bruce Mutard is another one who lives over in Perth. He was a guest at a past Phantom dinner. He's actually got this really amazing book talking about bullying in school, and he's kind of like tailoring it to be like a teaching tool, which is pretty cool. I've seen that firsthand. Tim McEwen is another one who's got work being in the exhibition as well, who has done a Phantom card in the Phantom Zone series as well. So look, it's great. Yeah, Phantom aside, it's great to see you know, their work being portrayed to another audience.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And according to the illustrateyourlife.com website, or they're also the Australian Comics Exhibition website, I think that's what the ACE, for lack of a better word, the exhibition from January 27th, they're in the Fang Shuo Commune, Chengdu, open to the public with free entry until February 29th. So it's open for just a bit over a month. It's taking place in Chengdu's leading bookstore and cultural space. The exhibition launch program will feature workshops for art students and younger artists, providing an engaging and innovative experience for people in Chengdu. ACE, or the Australian Comics exhibition is proudly supported by the Australian Consulate General in Chengdu through its public diplomacy program promoting Australian culture, art and artists overseas. So this sounds like the same group who did the Thailand one the other year. Mm. And it's good to see the Australian government getting behind Australian artists.
Yeah, absolutely. And it does give Paul Mason, for instance, the unique, it puts him in a unique situation where he's having his Phantom artwork displayed in two exhibitions concurrently, one in Bundaberg and one in Chengdu, as you said. So it wouldn't be too often that that's happened, where Phantom artwork's been displayed in two different exhibitions at the same time.
In two different countries,
that's right. So, it certainly there is Phantom artwork that's being displayed. A lot of it is the same stuff that was up in the Thailand or in the Thai exhibition that was last year or the year before. So, it's nice that it's going up. You'd like to think it might be a little bit more public than just in a bookstore, which is basically the upshot of it. And how many Chinese? It's certainly not going to reach a billion Chinese eyeballs. How many people actually see it is who knows. But it's nice recognition for all of those Australian artists, as you've said. And good to see that. They're getting their artwork in front of more people.
Rightio. I think we're up to the end of all our news. My last little point here is that we have some Patreon updates, so please support us. Just a reminder that the money goes to hosting the website, of course. It goes to the competitions that we run and all the other bills that we have to pay. It does not go to us. It all goes to Chronicle Chamber.
No, we do need to make the point that Patreons are not paying for Jermaine's beer importation. the reviews are going on the Chronicle Chamber website, but the Chronicle Chamber is not paying for those beers.
Touché. Very good point.
Yes, we are also after the A&E biography, because our copy is corrupt. So please contact us if you have a copy. That would be very, very nice.
I did a bit of work on that today. Our English copy is corrupt. We do have a copy of the A&E biography with Portuguese subtitles and no sound. So I guess that's a version of corrupt. if you can read Portuguese, then you might be right. Gee, it's hard to find. Like the DVD has not been sold for about 15 years by the looks of it. It's a great little biography. I have seen it, and in fact, I think I saw it off the Chronicle Chamber copy. So that's why I was like, surely it's not corrupt. It must be there somewhere. I can't find it. But it's got some really it was released at about the time of the 1996 movie. It's got some really interesting insights from Lee Falk at the time. It's got some really behind-the-scenes movie stuff and even some deleted scenes from the movie that didn't actually make it into the final film. So I do hope we can find another copy of it out there somewhere.
Mm. Look, there's plenty of fans that will have a DVD, so please get in touch with us if you can.
It'd be fantastic. Right, absolutely. Right, thank you for listening or watching us. Just a reminder that our website is chroniclechamber.com, and you can email us, chroniclechamber@gmail.com is the address there. We would love to hear your thoughts, feedback, and opinions on our social media platforms or over at the YouTube channel. You can subscribe to us via YouTube or through your favorite podcast apps, including iTunes or Spotify. Please leave us a ranking. And if you're on YouTube, make sure you ding the bell and click subscribe and all the rest of it. Fellas, thank you very much for spending a Sunday night talking Phantom with me. I appreciate it immensely.
Yes, always a pleasure talking Phantom and getting away from real life. Hope you've enjoyed that as well. And for myself, happy Phantom.
Yeah, here. Love spending the time with you guys, and happy Phantoming to everybody.
Happy Phantoming, one and all.